The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Senator Gerard Crockwell, you've been on your bike.
I certainly have.
Good morning, Pat. And welcome.
Good morning.
What
good morning
prompted
to your
it?
You did a show last week where you were discussing the trials and tribulations of travelling around Dublin, and I was sitting at the traffic lights in Temple Oak, and four cyclists crashed the lights and went through. I pulled in a couple of hundred yards further on, and I tweeted your programme to say, you know, this had happened, including one motorcyclist. And I came in for a barrage of abuse, but one chap said to me, try cycling around Dublin and let's see your opinion. And I said, I'm up for it. And
now, how long since you've been on the bike?
I can tell you exactly. It was September 1968.
Oh, my God. All right, so 50 years plus.
50 years plus. When I bought my first Honda 50, I gave up my High Nelly. I think I got £20 on a trade-in for it.
So you have not been on a push bike since 1968?
No. I missed out badly during my time in the Defence Forces. Because I broke my glasses and they wouldn't let me do the bicycle exercise. So
so even then you didn't get on a bike. No. Now, did you have a bike? Did you have to borrow a bike? Did you use a city bike?
I went to Capel Street and I rented a bicycle because they offered me the full safety equipment. So high-vis jacket, helmet, lock for the bicycle and a bicycle that would be serviceable. So I was anxious if I was going to do it that I would stay within the law.
Did you cycle alone or did you have company?
The plan was I was to cycle at 1 o'clock yesterday with company, but given that it had been so long since I had been on a bicycle, I decided I would take a couple of trips on Friday on my own. And I got to tell you, that was pretty scary.
All right, because everything has changed, including, by the way, cycling education, because when we were all going to school, it was drilled into us about hand signals, if you're turning left, turning right, and all of that. I don't think there's any cycling education anymore. You pick it up from your parents or an older sibling or whatever. That's the way people tend to learn. Or they just give it a go, get on a city bike and off they pop.
Yeah, and I think the city bike system is fantastic. But the group that decided to back me on this, iBike Dublin, Kieran Ferry, Oisin O'Connor, Lucille Redmond and Alan Downey, fantastic advocates for cycling. These people know what they want. They said to me, come and experience the issues. And they brought me on a route that exposed me to many of the issues.
Now, what time of the day did you go?
Now, I went at lunchtime
on Monday.
Now, you
see, that's not typical. Our Anne-Marie here comes in every morning from her place, from her home place, having dropped the kids off. And she's coping with leaves, blocked shores, puddles, potholes, guys in on bicycles whizzing past her because she wouldn't be going at 40 miles an hour, cars pulling in, people opening doors in front of her, buses, intensity, which on a lovely sunny afternoon yesterday, no frost, the frost had been melted. I mean, you picked a very benign time to go cycling.
Yes, yesterday was quite benign. Friday, on the other hand, was a dark, murky, filthy
day. True.
And as I cycled, particularly up Parliament Street and down Dame Street, I got to tell you, I never looked at a car before as a weapon of destruction. The speed is irrelevant. The closeness at which drivers come to you. I was deeply surprised at the fact that professional drivers like taxi drivers, truck drivers, van drivers gave me space. At traffic lights, they allowed me to take off before they took off. Your average car driver was in competition with me to see could he get his Mercedes over the line quicker than I could get my bicycle.
The professional drivers, you see, they have to put up with this. Taxi drivers have infinite patience, by and large. I mean, there are some cowboys out there, but by and large, they're used to it. They have to spend the whole day in the car.
That's right.
You know, nothing's going to change for them. Yeah. They have no destination except the one that the passenger ordains. Yeah. So they're not too fussed about it and they generally behave well. And the same with delivery vans. They're out there all day, every day. So they're used to the slings and arrows.
Absolutely, Pat. And I think Oisin O'Connor in particular explained to me the difference in cyclists, and he calls them the utility cyclist and the sporting cyclist. So the utility cyclist is people like your colleague here who makes their way to work every day on a bicycle, and without doubt it is the most hazardous occupation you can engage in. I would qualify that a little bit later on. But the sports cyclists, the guys who do the Enniskerry Road at the weekend, they tend to care less for traffic and are less observant of the rules of the road, if you want. And I was amazed at the fact that I pointed out on Sunday morning I saw one group four abreast, brought a fury down on top of me by a very small few people, with a sort of a self-righteous we're entitled to be wherever we want to be. I told it as I saw it. I've agreed to do Cork, I've agreed to do Galway, Waterford and Limerick, right? Because I think the issues surrounding cycling are important, particularly as we're now talking about environmental issues.
Now, you were there at lunchtime yesterday and it was a bright day in the capital. Therefore, the issues that are being brought up, say, on the text here, I currently see that most cyclists at the moment have no lights or helmets, especially school kids. That's from Darren in Galway. The light on the bike, I mean, you're obliged by law to have lights front and rear on a bike, but sometimes the glimmer man back in the war would have been proud of the light that emanates from some bikes. And then there are other bikes with those flashing lights, and you cannot miss them. You know, they announce their presence very effectively.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I mean, people like the guys I met in iBike Dublin, these people know what they want. They know, for example, the infrastructure they're looking for, and they advocate for it very well. They're going to meet the minister on Wednesday in the Joint Oireachtas Committee, and I think they'll do cyclists proud. They do not take chances. At least when I was with them, they did not. They want to get around the city. They want to get around the city safely. And while we were out yesterday, some cyclists who broke the law, who crashed lights and various other things, it was pointed out to me, that's wrong. They shouldn't do that. But they said...
But often on this programme, there is denial by the cycling lobby. They say there's one or two bad eggs who do this and bring us all into disrepute. It's not just one or two bad eggs, I'm afraid.
No, I'm afraid it's not. And the difference, as somebody pointed out to me last night on Twitter, if a car breaks a red light, the chances if they hit somebody it could be fatal or certainly life-changing for the unfortunate individual. In the event of a bicycle doing it, one chap said to me last night, show me the statistics where a bicycle has killed somebody. I mean, this sort of nonsense does nobody any service.
There's a bicycle killed someone on Merrion Road, a bicycle guy coming the wrong way in one way, and a pedestrian was trying to cross, looking towards the oncoming traffic, stepped out, hit by someone who was cycling in the wrong direction. Therefore, the pedestrian hadn't looked in that direction because there was supposed to be no traffic coming there, fell down, banged his head and died.
Yes, and I'm aware of the another young man out at Marley Park who hit a pedestrian while on a bicycle, went over the handlebars, hit his head and died, actually rushing home to give his parents his leaving cert results, which were incredible. So, I mean, what we got to move to a position where road users of all sorts have mutual respect for each other. We have to move to a situation where the cycle laneway down in City Quay is a pleasure to cycle along. Yeah. Absolute pleasure. But if you're coming down from Westland Row Station, heading down the new Contraflow towards City Quay, and you're cycling along, first thing we found, two Dublin City Council vans in the middle of the cycling lane. Yeah. Second thing we found, just as you come to the end of that road, I think they call it Lombard Street, the cycle lane disappears. Absolutely disappears. You find others.
You find sharing your cycle lane with the bus.
That's right.
On the Merrion Road.
And again, as you drive down the quays, the cycle lane, bus lane, taxi lane are all the same, while the cars have a right-hand lane to themselves. So I think what we've got to sit down and look at is we've got to look at the infrastructure. We have to look at cities like what you'll see in Amsterdam, for example. I believe that there is a strong case to be made, for example, to have a separate set of traffic lights for cyclists that would allow cyclists to take off maybe 30 seconds before cars at traffic lights.
And then they might get whacked by someone going through on an orange. This is the problem.
And these problems, look, Pat, I've been a motorist for the best part of 45 years, and I never really looked at cyclists as anything other than a nuisance in my way, frequently out around Enniskerry.
I've been obviously cyclist, motorcyclist and motorist, and I do all three at different times, mostly cycling now for leisure rather than the commute. And you have a different mindset when you're on a bike or indeed on a motorbike. You're always looking for the car that'll come out of a gateway, not thinking that there might be someone proceeding. So you have a different mindset. Then you get into a car and you're cocooned in a car.
Absolutely.
And you're also watching the behaviour of all the other road users. And I can understand, as someone who cycles, if you are approaching at, you know, a moderate speed, comfortable speed, a traffic light, and it's on your own pedal power you've achieved this speed, and then it goes red, and you know there's nothing coming that you can, the temptation is to whiz through, because you don't want to start from scratch again to build up that momentum. And that's why I think I understand why they do it. They don't realise they're putting themselves in peril and also outraging everybody else who obeys the traffic signal.
Absolutely. And yesterday, as we approached Kildare Street, when we went to go back up Kildare Street, a cyclist came from behind us, overtook us on the left-hand side and swung around to the right in front of us. He was a courier type cyclist. I understand he has to get around town. He has to do his day's work. But he, to me, was as threatening as the van driver who came in behind us coming up Kildare Street and revved his van incessantly until we got out of his way.
Now, there's a slight incline in Kildare Street. And you haven't cycled for 50 years. So I presume it was tough going, climbing up.
Yeah, I got to say it was tough going, Pat. Look, I mean, the exercise was an exercise that I wish a number of my colleagues would undertake as well, because I think we learn something. We frequently talk in Leinster House about things that we haven't experienced. I think it's a worthwhile exercise from that point of view. I'm looking forward to trying some of the other cities. There are many things we talk about that we have never experienced, and I think we need to do that. I would add one thing.
By the way, Cork, if you're thinking of trying Cork, the city of many challenging hills.
I can tell the people in Cork now, if I go down there, I want a self-propelled bicycle. I'm quite prepared to sit on it. But one of the things, Pat, that I said I would address this morning, and it is becoming more and more frequent when I make a statement about something, and that is the vicious attacks on my previous career in the British Forces. And absolutely horrendous stuff. It is becoming more and more prevalent to the point that it has brought back the memories of 1974 when my mother and father were subjected to the most horrendous intimidation at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, threats to the family home and this sort of thing. There are a number of people now who pursue me on social media.
And what has prompted this, do you think? Was it, you know, elevating your head above the parapet for the presidential election, which you then did not contest? Or was it just talking in the context of that aborted bid for the presidency that you actually talked about your background?
Well, my background had become public. I had hidden my background, I suppose, wrongly, hidden it from 1975 when I returned home until I was elected in 2014. It became an issue in 2014 and I was asked about it and I admitted, yes, I had served. And I wondered at that time, why had I felt I had to hide this? And of course, thinking back to the intimidation of 2014, I fully understand why I did. And it was taken, and indeed Sinn Féin votes elected me in that by-election, and I have many, many interactions with the Sinn Féin party today, something I wouldn't have dreamt of ever happening back in 1974. But I actually believe it's down to the current instability that exists in the country right now. And
because of Brexit and
Brexit and the destabilisation that has taken place. Now, I have done things like gone and met the UDR Association. Indeed, I addressed the UDR Association dinner last year, and the topic I chose was collusion, and I spoke openly about collusion and their role in collusion. I addressed a meeting in Stormont just in the summer, which was occupied by INLA, Provisional IRA, UVF, UDA and Red Hand Commandos, all in the one room, and we were talking about Ireland and the future of Ireland. I believe that there is a cohort out there at the moment, the young guns I would refer to. You and I might call them barstool heroes, but I'm rather concerned at the change in tempo, if you want, towards all things that we thought we put to bed in 1998.
Well, it's talk of border polls, and that can make people antsy, the idea that demographics might give a result that, well, we don't know how many people north and south. Everyone wants it in the south on the horizon somewhere. Do they want it tomorrow?
I would be interested to see how that would work out. I reject the border poll idea myself. I think the day we're able to accommodate those in the Orange Order down here, I'd be happy to do that. But I digress from the cyclists. And I mean, the key thing today is to ask my colleague motorists that when you see a cyclist, for 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, think about what they're thinking. Think of the fear they express. It's surprising how big a Mini looks, or a small Fiat car, or a small Nissan car looks as they approach you or come up behind you. And I have to say, Friday, I was petrified. Yesterday, you're dead right. It was a pleasure to cycle around the city, apart from some hairy moments in Dame Street. We did do a video, and I hope
that'll
that
be going
online.
Up online today.
I hope people see the cyclists who break the law as well.
All right, Senator Gerard Crockwell, thank you very much. Just one postscript here. If people in Dublin were using pogo sticks, there'd be call for a pogo stick lane. The rest of the country doesn't need paths, let alone roads, says that texter.